Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
In a world full of straight people, aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race?
RuPaul's Drag Race, may the best drag queen win. Drag queen win.
And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
I'm Matt McConkie. I'm a writer, performer, and host of this podcast about And Just Like That. But now that we've recapped both seasons of the show, I couldn't help but wonder, should I go back and cover the original Sex and the City? The answer, of course, is no, but I can't be stopped, so every week I'll be joined by my very own Mirandas and Charlottes to unpack an episode or movie of their choosing. We're doing Sex and the City Roulette with extra Samantha and none of the Che. And just like Matt, welcome to the show. Folks, welcome to the show. It is a rainy Saturday afternoon here in Los Angeles, very gloomy, and there's nothing I'd rather be doing. It's about to get so cozy in here. We're talking about an especially cozy episode, actually, too. We're unpacking another classic from Sex and the City. This is season 6, episode 13. It's called Let There Be Light. HBO's logline is, Carrie struggles to keep it light after spending the night with Alexander. Charlotte volunteers to help others and winds up in the dark. So that's their description. My description is that it's the one where Carrie takes a lover and learns about Google. It's written and directed by Michael Patrick King, my bestie. And speaking of Michaels and their besties, my husband, Michael, has a bestie from high school who lives in Toronto, and she is a Second City main stage alumnus, where she wrote and performed in 3 critically acclaimed reviews. She currently writes for CBC's The Great Canadian Baking Show. She co-created, wrote, and starred in the ABC.com series Newborn Moms, where she earned a CSA nomination for Best Performance. You've seen her on What We Do in the Shadows, Ghosts, Transplant, Kim's Convenience, Nadine DeJury. Hello.
Oh, hello, Matt. Honored to be here.
What a thrill. And our next guest, also a friend, and not to brag, but this one, we play pickleball together. You've seen her in Lady Bird, Mad Men, Grey's Anatomy, a whole bunch of T-Mobile commercials. I saw her at a Verizon audition yesterday. I'm sure she booked that. And she's in 3 of my favorite shows of all time, Enlightened, The Comeback, and she's in this very episode of Sex and the City we're going to discuss today, Bane Gibby. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. I finally get to ask you everything I want to ask you on the pickleball court, but never have time.
Yeah, because we're just getting into it. We're just focused on the sport of pickle.
We're just animals out there on that court. So Bane, before we discuss your star turn in this show, what is your level of fandom when it comes to the Sex and the City multiverse?
It's pretty huge. I was a massive fan. So I was living in New York City when Sex and the City was like at its peak. Mm. But for the first part of it, I was too broke to have HBO. So I would like hear about people talking about Sex and the City. And I was like, that sounds pretty great, you know? And then at a certain point, I got HBO. I remember I rent, this is how long ago it was, I got out the old VHS tapes from the library to catch up on the previous seasons. So I was all caught up. And then when I actually got the guest star on the very last season, I was such a massive fan that I could almost not behave like a normal functioning human in all of the phases of it, the costume fitting, the table read. I was like in a flop sweat, and I could barely hold like my Snapple iced tea that I had at the table read because I was such a huge fan.
Oh my God. Well, okay, we're going to go through every beat of that experience when we get to that scene. But Nadine, I don't know this about you. Are you a big Sex and the City head?
I am. My problem is that my memory is bad. So while I've watched it maybe five times, like I don't remember all the details. So it was really nice to go back and rewatch some episodes. Then I got sucked in. I started going back to older episodes. It was a big disaster. Yes, I came to it similarly a bit later because I didn't have HBO at the time. So I got into it when I borrowed actually my friend's DVD box set and just would watch, like spend a whole weekend before binging was a thing, spent the whole weekend like watching the whole thing. And then I remember every time I was like, had a bad breakup with a guy or a relationship, I would find the most similar experience that happened in the Sex in the City canon and rewatch those episodes to figure out how to process whatever breakup I was going through.
That could be like a specific therapeutic format that somebody could adapt. You don't need therapy. You just need to pull up this episode of Sex and the City.
100%. It did help. It really did help.
That's actually brilliant, Bane. Like the way that therapists are prescribing like ketamine to some people now, like Sex and the City could very much play that role for a certain type of healing. I know it is for me. Bane, when you were, you know, living in New York, doing the like young actor thing and a Sex and the City fan, was your dating life were you having your own Carrie Bradshaw experience there?
What did that look like? I was having like the Carrie Bradshaw on ketamine, basically. It was like the underbelly. Like I was having so many insane experiences. And this was when online dating was really new. We're talking like the OG sites of like nerve.com and like the very first.
Oh, wow.
And I was all in it. I was very open to it at the time. And I had so many completely insane things, like straight up people ordering a bunch of stuff and then being like, well, I don't have any money, so you got this one, you know, and like just, oh, it was like the opposite of the glamorous life. So it was nice to be able to look through that lens and be like, we are living in the same city, but we are having such wildly different experiences. You know, taking the subway home from these dates, and it's like that overhead lighting, and like someone barfs on the subway, and you're like Carrie Bradshaw is just a stone's throw from here, having such a different life, but maybe someday I'll have that life.
And look at you now. Let's talk about that Carrie Bradshaw life, because, you know, in the opening, she gets this letter in the mail from Alexander Petrovsky, played, of course, by Mikhail Baryshnikov. They go on this walk and their love story is really like kicking off here. But I got to be honest, I've talked a lot about my disdain for Big, but Alexander, he really turns my stomach. He's worse than Berger for me. Let me pose it to you this way. Nadine, is Alexander Carey's worst boyfriend ever?
You know what? I hated him, Matt, when I was watching it like way back, you know, 15 years ago or whatever it was, 20 years ago. Hated it. Hated him. Didn't understand the appeal. But now I'm watching with 40-year-old eyes.
Oh. And I'm like, what are you seeing?
I'm like, oh, he's sexy. I always thought he was disgusting. That's so rude. I was not attracted to him when I was 20, whatever. Now I'm like, oh, this is a yum yum daddy a little bit. So I've come around, and like that was a shocking moment. That was the biggest shock in rewatching this episode, was that I was attracted to him. But yes, it's very clear it's just like a sexual chemistry between them that he doesn't get her jokes. They don't know how to play around, really. Yeah. So yeah, definitely not a good match for me.
I thought that was universally understood that he was terrible. Bane, I'm curious your take, because when I was talking to my husband, Michael, before we got on, and I was like, ugh, it's someone with Alexander Petrovsky. And he was like, oh, he's my favorite of Carrie's boyfriends. I was like, what the hell are you? How am I just now learning this? I'm like, it's not the age thing. I know they sort of make a lot of hay about that. It's like part of it is just Carrie is 4 feet tall and like 75 pounds wet, and he's the same size as her. I'm like, this is a tiny little Russian man. But I think if I'm really being honest, it's the fact that he eats dinner at 10 p.m. at night, which is to me is just like so gross. It's like, I mean, I eat dinner at 5. I'm like, Tanuk, please grow up. Alexander.
I was cringing so much. And I hadn't watched this episode in a long time. And let me just give a little context that I was a ballet nerd growing up. And we used to watch like old VHS tapes of Baryshnikov. I, in fact, stenciled my own T-shirt in fifth grade that said, I love Baryshnikov. That's how much of a tweet I was. And I wore it to school with my parachute pants. And I definitely got a lot of shit for it. Like it was not cool at all. So when I met him and I was there and I was in the same room with him, I was very starstruck. But he, in the episode, when he goes to kiss her neck and they're sitting on that park bench, I really felt like I could see the actress as JP like cringe and shiver. And then like, like it was gross. And then the next scene, she's like, I almost had sex with him on a park bench. And I'm like, did you? Because I felt like I could see yeah. like, ooh. Like it was very uncomfortable for me. And then just, I was trying to kind of pinpoint it last night. I was thinking about it. And I think it's his performative, like what the character Carrie says. It's like, it's all feels very performative. And like, there's been a million women in and out that you've like written that the note for on your stationery. And it doesn't ever feel like he's really having an authentic, you know, moment with her, which they lay really early when she goes like, oh, there's not a mouse trap in there. And he doesn't get the joke. It's like they're really laying that in there for the audience. But I also feel like there is zero chemistry between the two actors. Zero.
Agreed. I feel like SJP was like, I love Baryshnikov. He's an icon. Obviously, it's going to be fireworks. But then he gets on there and it's like, it's not. I'm going to be very honest. I think in retrospect, I think I learned who Baryshnikov was through this show.
Really?
I don't think I, and now I'm,
I don't
obviously
think I
know.
I did either. But that makes sense.
And I saw him perform once.
You, unless you were in the dance world in some way, you know, like.
We talked recently about that episode where Carrie doesn't have enough money to buy her apartment and Charlotte eventually gives her her engagement ring to help her get the money. That one always strikes a nerve because it's such a relatable topic because sometimes that paycheck just doesn't seem to come quick enough. But look, life doesn't happen bi-weekly, so why should payday? The money you earn can be in your hands today with Earnin. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app, you verify your paycheck, then you access up to $100 a day as you work, leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I know I've got my husband's birthday coming up. I want to give him a nice gift. He's a man who likes the nicer things in life. So that's certainly how I would use the extra money I'd get from Earnin. Download Earnin today. It's EARNIN in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Just Like Matt under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. That's Just Like Matt under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. If you've ever listened to this podcast, you know I'm a huge fan of therapy. It's a big part of my life. Therapy is where I process a lot of the things that we talk about on this podcast. You know, stress about aging or career or navigating a breakup, whether it be romantic or an issue with friends. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Another reason I love therapy is that it helps me to recharge my social battery, especially as we're ramping up for summer. We're all going to be seeing a lot more friends and family. Some of us have, some introverted tendencies. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/likematt today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/likematt. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I did see him perform live after this. He did some show here in LA, I think with Willem Dafoe, and it was amazing. But of course, I'm watching it through the lens of like, oh, it's the guy from Sex and the City. Yeah, I will say on a positive note, just even starting from their first scene together, and then we get a few more of these, like so much autumn in New York porn in this episode, just like beautiful walks outside in the parks with the leaves changing. Bane and I are in LA. We're not getting any of that. Very nice to see that. And also very fun waxing scene, you know, where Carrie's learning Russian in between the painful strips. Gotta say, Carrie walked so that 40-year-old virgin could run.
Yes.
With that little comedy scene.
Yes, I also really love this sort of rhythmic thing she does with the ooh, ah. Like, it was very satisfying to me, that whole, whether it was on the page or not, I was like, the way they cut it, it worked. It, I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, I was reminded how comedic the original series was. And when I was watching other episodes too, it's like they're such brilliant comic actors.
Yes.
A lot of the physical comedy, like all the sex scenes, are always so funny.
Yeah. And then there's the great comedians like Baryshnikov, you know.
yes. Stealing the show with all his clown.
Well, I do remember this, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but I do remember that there was a lot of problem understanding him. And I do remember that the day he was shooting and I was shooting my thing, they were really grilling him. Like, the script supervisor was really grilling him because he wasn't getting the lines correct. And I remember at one point he turned in, he goes, I'm going to wring your neck. She's like, I'm just trying to do my job because people need to hear the dialogue. And so there was definitely a lot of like attention being paid to, like, we just need you to get the lot. We just need you to get it once.
Just one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we need the character to get certain words wrong as written, but not every word.
Yeah.
Bane, I have to hear. I hope we get into this audition story.
We're going through every beat of this. Every moment. We're going to do 2 more hours just on getting the part. That's before she even gets to set. The first time Carrie Googles someone, she learns about Google.com in this episode. Also, the Carrie and Samantha walk and talk scene where Samantha, you know, wants to know how the pancakes were.
Yes.
I mean, I say this I'm just a broken record. The chemistry between those two actors, talk about chemistry. Yes. She may not have it with Baryshnikov, but my God, does she have it with Kim Cattrall?
I know. And isn't that wild? Because it really is, like you said in the last episode, like, it's just there. And maybe they didn't even hang out off set or whatever, but they start down that street and you just really do believe that they're friends.
Yeah.
Also, do we know if they were never friends? Do we have that information?
I don't know if we do.
We don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
But speaking of Samantha, she brings up the crux of the issue that Carrie is grappling with here, which is, you know, about trying to keep it light and playing hard to get with a man who is hard to get. And I got to say, in my young single days, the only time I could play hard to get successfully was when it was with someone that I truly did not care about. But then it always worked. Like they I can say that only because the reverse is also true, that anytime somebody played hard to get with me, it really worked. I was like, I like you. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Same with like professional rejections. I'm just like, God, I respect anybody who does not want this. But talk to me about your experiences with playing hard to get in your own lives. Nadine, is that how you landed Sharjal?
I guess it is how I landed Sharjal. There were times where I definitely faked it, but I'm just so bad at faking it when I like someone. So I don't think it has ever actually worked. The only time it works is when I legitimately don't feel anything. Exactly. And it's like, you're able to be casual. But I also found it interesting that she was so anxious in her relationship, or the start of this relationship with Alexander, because I feel like he didn't give her other than her own Googling, I didn't feel like he gave her any reason to like be worried that he wasn't into her. I don't know if that
because she kept talking about the other women, and like he never referenced other women.
No, had they been in his house, or like had all the people working in his house, let's say were all models or whatever, walking around naked, it might be a different thing.
Right.
But anyways, that's just that. I don't know how to play hard to get. People say fake it till you make it. I can't. I am a very poor actress in that regard. I wear my heart on my sleeve, and like what you see is what you get, unfortunately. But I've tried.
Folks, sunnier days are a-coming. Summer's right around the corner. We're all on our wellness journeys, and I can think of no better way to kickstart your new healthy routine than with Factor Meals. And right now, if you go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use our code likematt50, you'll get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription's active. So with Factor Meals, there are 35 different meal options, more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, so you've always got new flavors to explore. You can make your day delicious from breakfast to dessert, everything in between. You'll stay fueled with easy, nutritious options. I'm talking filet mignon. I'm talking shrimp. I'm talking blackened salmon. And Factor Meals are ready in 2 minutes, so no shopping, no prepping, no cooking, no cleanup. Head to factormeals.com right now. Go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use code likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code likematt50 at factormeals.com/likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
Same. And I continue to fail. Bane, how are you with playing hard to get?
Oh, horrendous. I mean, it's my worst play. Like, I think me playing hard to get is the equivalent of someone not knowing I exist. You know, it's like if I'm hard to get, yes. they're never getting me because they're just unaware that I'm around. I think there was one time that I didn't even mean to play hard to get, but it really was sort of this long elongated dance back and forth with one boyfriend who, like, he was very interested and I wasn't. And then I was kind of very interested and he was sort of not paying attention to me. He was focused on other things. And there was sort of this months long back and forth. And I remember one time I was in a play and he brought flowers and I was like very embarrassed because I was like, I just don't like him. And then, so it was this sort of back and forth. And then when we actually both realized that we liked each other, it was very satisfying, but it was because it was genuine. There was not any game playing. It was right. Actually real sort of back and forth. But that is really the only time. And my flaw is that I have no game. I'm working on it. But my thing is I'm like very transparent. I really like you. And that doesn't go over well most of the time. It's just too much.
So it doesn't go over well when it's the wrong person.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. So I think I'm learning to hold a little bit back but I think with Carrie, it was more that she was trying something new from her previous relationships, and it wasn't so much that she was being hard to get. I mean, she calls it that, but I think it's that she's like, let me just try this totally out of the box thing where he's going to be a lover and I'm not going to get attached and it's just going to be fun. And at the same time, Samantha is, you know, with Smith and she's sort of saying like, this isn't really my usual thing. Like she goes running back to Richard, which doesn't go well. So it's like Carrie wants to try something new. Samantha is thinking she wants to go back to the old familiar. And I think it's Carrie having cold feet about this is uncharted waters for me. I don't understand what to do. And I think she was sort of used to being in control. And when she comes down the stairs and there's all those people and she sort of feels like very insecure, I think that's kind of the vibe that she doesn't like about the whole thing. She's like, I feel like a rookie here.
Yeah, but and it's also the thing that keeps her wanting more. It's like, this guy is so important. I can't quite, it's like the thing that Big used to say about the whatever movie star he was dating, where it's like, she can reach me, but I can never reach her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned the Miranda thing. It's so great to see an episode where Miranda and Steve are together and it's going well after seeing, after like dealing with and just like that so much. It's like, oh yeah, I forgot that they had, they were really great together for a period of time. But I gotta say, really felt for Robert Blair Underwood. You know, Miranda's navigating the awkwardness of having dated a neighbor. They really do Robert dirty here because he was this normal, nice guy. And now he's like so angry that Miranda dumped him. And at first you're like, really, Blair Underwood? Like, you're this obsessed with Miranda? With nothing but love and respect for my Miranda. But I'm like, you're Blair Underwood. But then he's over it very quickly. And apparently he's got like, I think they implied that it was like multiple sex workers at his apartment. I'm just like, is Robert okay?
Yeah.
What's happening with Robert?
I was laughing. I mean, I forgot how hard he goes at her on. First of all, I love this Miranda storyline because I love the way she plays this straight down the line where she's like, be kind. You know, he's still in love. Like, I found that so, I was like, this is so funny. And she's such a great actress. But I forgot how sort of crazy Robert goes in the stairwell when he's imitating her. And it was, it's so wildly uncomfortable. And I think he's just really enjoying. He's like, mm-hmm. I'm going to make this woman move. Like, I think he's like, you dicked me over. And so now I am going, like, I don't really care that much, but I know I can just like do this and make your life miserable. But I forgot that he said that thing about like, no one's ever been this deep inside me. I was like, no, oh my God.
Oh my God.
He's so brilliant too. Like, missed him. And that scene is such a like shining moment for him because he really goes hard.
Another character I'd like to see come back in and just like that. Oh, Robert reappearing. Yes, Miranda please. Being like, guess what? I'm a lesbian, it turns out. Water under the bridge.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're right. It was refreshing to see them get along and happy and like, oh yeah, this is why they were together.
And just Steve being that sweet Steve when he comes back to her and she says, was he very upset? And she's like, he just like kind of gives it to her. Like, yeah, don't worry. And then he makes himself into the hero, but he doesn't want to tell her. He's like, yeah, there were prostitutes there or sex workers there. Like, he spares her that, which is also such a nice little ending of that story.
Yeah, such a Steve move.
I just thought Robert like found a bunch of ladies at the club or a restaurant. I didn't think that he hired them. I was like, this guy picks up.
Something in the voiceover, the Carrie's voiceover, that sort of implied that they, I can't even remember what the line was, I think it might be open to interpretation. I don't know. Either way, yes, I think Robert fucks.
Yeah, that was like a Sunday night for him. You know, that was like regular old night.
So meanwhile, Charlotte has decided to volunteer with the blind. She has to sort of go through like training with a brilliant young coordinator who explains, you know, how she's, in order to like get accustomed to the job, she's going to need to walk around blindfolded in public. And that coordinator was played by Bane Gibby.
Yes.
So Bane, we're going to get into your first guest star television job.
Yeah.
Oh,
first,
wow.
First. God. And something that you're a fan of. Like, what did your career look like when this audition came around?
My career looked very much like the dating life at this time. It was like, I was like really wanting it to go well and it wasn't going well. I had been in New York about 7 years at this time. I was doing a lot of improv and some sketch and, you know, stuff like that. And I was doing stand-up, which was like comedic. I wasn't doing traditional stand-up. I write these comedic songs. And I was like doing those at like comedy clubs and like like 4 or 5 nights a week. I was like out doing that just because it made me feel like I was creating something and doing something, but I could not get anything going in terms of like a real audition or like an agent or a manager. And I was trying so hard and I was starting to get to a very critical point for me where I was starting to have very serious conversations with myself. Like, you're trying really hard. You can't really seem to shake anything loose. I don't know what to do next, but I was feeling like this intense pressure, self-imposed, but I was feeling like something really has to sort of shake loose or I can't really, this is not sustainable. I was like teaching preschool and I had made a CD of my comedic songs. Again, this is like giving you the time capsule. Like, I made my own CD. And someone had given it to the casting director of Sex and the City, whose name was Cammie Hickman, and had said like, you know, oh, you should listen to this at the gym. This girl's really funny. And this is like one of her live shows. So she listened to it at the gym, emailed me on my AOL, you know, at the time, and like called me in for another show called Hope and Faith. Kelly Ripa was in it.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like way too young for the role, but she, like I got to meet her. She's like, oh, okay, now that I've sort of laid eyes on you and I kind of have more of a sense of who you are, I'll bring you in for something else. And I was like, great. Like this was like my first little toehold of like something going my way. And then I got the Sex and the City audition. And I was like, holy.
The second audition.
Oh my God.
And I was like, holy cow. And so it was, the role was called volunteer coordinator. And I, you know, got my slacks, like my black slacks. And it was probably like a shiny shirt or something. I can't remember what I was wearing. Went to the audition and I had my little, you know, had rehearsed. And I remember this girl in the waiting room going, I mean, this is like, there's just like nothing to the scene, you know, like it's just like pushing story forward. Like, what do you do with this? You know, kind of looking to me. And I was like, well, I have, you know, like I have something, like I have a little idea. Yeah. I'm not going to tell you what it is, you know. And
what was the something?
Well, just that, you know, she gives the information. There's like not a, there's a little phone call in there too that got cut out. But just that when I, you know, I was going to sort of play like, I need her to get out of my office. Like, okay, bye.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I remember I go in and it was very intimidating because Michael's sitting there. They're all sitting there in these chairs. It's like kind of a little bit of
Michael was there.
And it was like a little bit of a cavernous room and like a lot of space between me and them. And I just remember right before I went into the room, someone turned to me, and I always try to replicate this in my head now. Someone turned to me and they were like, did I see you doing comedy at the Cutting Room? And I was like, yeah, I have a regular show at the Cutting Room. And he goes, you're really funny. And it was like, oh, it was like, whew, this like adrenaline filled my body where I was like, I am funny. I can be really funny. I just need to go in there and be funny, just like this fucking guy I just said, you know?
Oh my
like,
God.
Don't be intimidated, you know? And so that just like filled me up and I went in and I did the scene and I did the like, okay, bye at the end. And they all cracked up. And then I went like, I don't know what happened. I went out of my body. I did this huge curtsy and I went, thank you.
That's adorable.
And then they like oh laughed again because it was just like, she's just being real. And then Michael was like, that was really great. Can you just do the whole thing again, just like that? Which I realized was just to see if I could replicate it over and over again, because it's like a single camera show. So I do it again. He's like, great. And they were just like, that was great. And I was like, okay. And I left. I was like, I think, I don't really know, but I think I did a great job. And the casting director did like an instant messenger on AOL, like a couple days later. She like, it was so funny because it's so weird. Never happens. But she like sent me a DM that was like, hey, you've been booked for the role of volunteer coordinator. And I was just like, because you have to understand, like, I couldn't get anything going, you know? So this was just like,
oh, God.
Massive, like, hallelujah.
It's
holy,
huge.
Holy, holy crap. Yeah. So
that is huge. And it makes you feel like all the hard work you were putting in was worth something, right?
100%. And it makes you feel like maybe I'm not insane. Like maybe I actually,
yeah.
You know, like, because there are these moments that everybody has, I don't care where you are in your career, that you're like, am I delusional? You know, like if things don't go your way for a little period of time, you're like, is it over? Like, is this not happening? Should I sort of come to my senses? And, you know, so it was one of these moments. It was like the first moment like that where I was like, oh my gosh, you know, and then fear, because I'm like, oh my God, now I have to do it. Like, do I know what I'm doing? And the table will go to the table read now. And it's like Baryshnikov, it's all the women. And my brother was an actor, and he had been in a play with Cynthia Nixon. So when she walked in, because I had met her maybe once or twice after the play or whatever. And I said, "Hey, I'm Cynthia. I'm Bane Gibby. My brother Ross was in the play Country Club with you." And she was like, "Oh, he's so great." So she sees the little sign at my place that says volunteer coordinator. And she thought I was like a volunteer coordinator on the set of the city. So she said something like, "So what volunteers are you going to be coordinating, you know, for us? And like, how long are you going to be working on set with us?" Or like something like that. And I was like, "Oh, just one episode. You know, I'm playing, you know, I interview Charlotte." And then she understood. She's like, oh, that's okay. So
that's so funny.
Yeah. So we do the table read, and I'm like, I literally was shaking. I was like, I could feel my entire body shaking, and kind of just barely got through the, you know, the one little thing that I had to do. And everyone's like, they're all so comfortable. And there's like this huge spread of food, delicious food. And everyone is like eating and like talking with, you know, just food, you know, so chill. And I had like a strawberry on my plate. And I was like, I couldn't possibly eat a
plate. Of course not.
Yeah, I was super nervous. Should I talk about the shoot?
I want to hear every beat of it. Yeah.
Okay, so
I mean, first of all, obviously you didn't get fired from the table read.
I didn't get fired. I was nervous. It was fine. There was definitely some tension. I will say this. There was definitely some tension at the table read between the women. And I didn't know. There was nothing at the time in the press. This was all stuff we learned later. But I do remember one of them coming in and like moving their place to be like not next to somebody else. And so blocking that and like, "Oh, this should be over here. And like, I want to sit over here." And there, I could just sense like, oh, there seems to be some friction going on. But I was also like so overwhelmed taking it all in that, you know, I did notice it because we were really at the tippy tail end. This was like the first episode of the second half of season 6. So I think whatever had been happening was in full, like annoyances were in full bloom. So we get the shoot date, and I have to go out to Silver Cup Studios in Queens, and I have to go from Brooklyn to Queens, and I'm terrified that I'm going to be late because the, you know, the subways are very unpredictable. So I get there literally an hour early. And I'm just like sitting outside. Sitting outside Silver Cup Studios, like on a like cement steps, just like. And I didn't know. I was like, I'm not going to go there with no makeup on because I'll look terrible. Like I didn't. It was like so many things were new. So I was like, well, so I can't go anywhere with no makeup on. So I'll just wear my makeup. And so then when I got there, they were like, "Are you already wearing makeup?" And I was like, "Well, yeah." Like it was like there were just so many things that I did that. Nobody sort of tells you, like, of course, you go with no makeup on and they do your makeup, you know. And I was just like every step of the way, just like bumbling and awkward. But it felt like, you know, Christmas morning. So we get to the set and I get in the chair and Kristen Davis is very all business. You know, she is not warm and fuzzy. And I'm kind of like following her lead. I'm just like, "Hi." And she's like, "Hi." And I remember she was talking about, you know, that she had all these things she needed to sign because they get asked to sign so many things. And she was like, "There's just so much. Do you have any idea how many things I'm asked to sign? I'm asked to sign so many things, like 400 things I had to sign yesterday." And I'm sitting there going like, I'm like, so glad I'm here. Like if someone asked me to sign, anything, you know, like, no, you know, it was just, there was such a like disparity between our two, you know, positions. And so I was just super awkward and we do the wide shot and there's like, I said, there's a phone call that had been cut out and this is how much I didn't know. The phone is supposed to ring and I'm like waiting for the phone to ring and I'm like, and it's not ringing. And I look to the director and he's like, "Ring. It's not going to ring. We're going to put it in post." Like,
oh my God.
like it doesn't ring, you know, but it was like, again, like every, at every turn, I was just confronted with like, I have a theater degree and yet I don't know anything. Like, I don't know what I'm and I'm just bumbling around. I'm just like in a pinball machine making mistakes at every turn, but it's okay. So I'm just like, okay, okay. So he's like, ring, ring, just pick up the phone. You know, I'm like, oh, okay. Hello. You know, so we do the wide, we maybe do it like three times and they're like, okay, we got it. And they go to like change the setup to go in for like coverage and the close-ups. And I thought we were done. And so I shake Kristen Davis's hand and I was like, thank you so much. It was so nice. It was so nice working with you. And she's like, oh, we're not done. We have to do the medium and then we have to do our close-ups. And I turned to her and I was like, this is my first job. I have no idea what's going on. And then she, and then it was like everything changed and she goes, oh, come here. All right. Let me explain everything to you. You know, and then she was like,
Like
everything changed. And she was like, okay, so now they're going to do my close-up and blah, 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 blah. Like, and then they're going to turn around and each time it's going to take a couple minutes. And anyway, so then it was like a whole new world where she could kind of like, she was like, oh, I can be like your, you know, your first like on set.
Yeah,
friend.
Your fairy godmother.
Fairy godmother. Yeah. So then she was like, you know, we were chit-chatting. And what was crazy is, so my brother is an actor, Ross, and he had actually also been on Sex and the City. He plays Brad the Bad Kisser. So we were chatting about that where I was like,
Charlotte kisses Brad?
Yeah. So Charlotte kisses Brad and he like sucks on her face and gives her And so I was like, my brother is Brad the Bad Kisser. And she was like, no way. So we were having just like a lovely little chat. And she was like, I see him around in New York City. He seems really nice. He's a great guy. So we have, we finish. We have this like, you know, we do the coverage and, you know, I kind of get a sense of like, oh, all right, this is how it works. It's really slow. You do it a zillion times and from all the different angles. And then it was over. And it was like, I had that first feeling of like I had just gotten my bearings and then it was time to go home. And it was like, over. Yeah. And then I was like riding the subway home and you just have this like your body is like filled with this excitement. And I remember then the next day I went back to my job at the preschool where I had to literally mop the floor. Like, you know, we took turns mopping. And one of the workers was like, I mean, she didn't mean to be mean, but it was like it hit really hard. She's like, so crazy, right? Like yesterday, a movie star, and today you're mopping the floor like Cinderella.
Oh, dear.
And I was like, that's
wow,
exactly
so the
right.
Fairy godmother metaphor is actually very apt.
Yes.
Like she,
yeah, we thread it. We're right threading it through. Yeah, so it was.
Turned back into a pumpkin.
Yeah, so I turned back into a pumpkin, but it was sort of the first of those cycles of so many. I mean, we still have them, right? It's like you come from the, and you're driving home from the job and it's like the adrenaline is coming through your body. And then you're at home and you're like, oh, I have to make dinner, you know, it's like back to reality. But in a way, it's such a beautiful cycle because it was kind of my first taste of this thing that I thought that I've wanted for so long. I actually really do want it. Like I got into the situation and even though I made all these mistakes and I'm like bumbling around and kind of messing up, I still got it done and loved it. So it was like, oh, well, that's good news. Because if I actually got myself in this situation and realized I didn't really like it, that would be pretty bad.
Also, you were wonderful too. Like, and it's very hard. I feel like the first time on camera, like on a professional set with a lead is really hard to deliver in a natural, comfortable way. So
thank you. Yeah. It's fun to think back on it too. Cause I haven't thought about this in a long time. So it's really nice to remember it.
It's really interesting to think back to specifically the moment that you get that you go into the audition. You know, that you're so nervous right before and then somebody says to you in passing that you're really funny and you remind yourself of that it was like you were reminded to keep it light. It was like the theme of the episode was also the lesson you had to learn in life.
Yes, it's such a good point. And I try to do that. If I see someone who I've seen in something in the waiting room, I always think, oh, should I say something? And then I'm like, yes, I should, because that might just be the exact thing that they need to hear, like somebody, you know, did for me. And it really did change the way that I felt walking in. And so, yeah, yeah, it was, yeah.
That's a generous approach. You know, it's Nadine DeJury famously goes into waiting rooms with her sunglasses on and she won't take them off.
Yeah,
and
I don't talk to anyone.
And
I mean,
there's very intimidating.
There's a lot of
I thought
people who do.
Go ahead.
Well, there's a lot of people who do like mind games. Like I remember once at 200 South where I ran into you the other day.
Yes.
Somebody walked into like the space and went, "It smells like dirty feet in here." And I was like, and then I was like, "Is it me who smells?" You know, and it's like I was like later. I was like, I think she came in and really tried to fuck with all of our.
Oh really? That's funny. It's just, it still bewilders me that how you go on set and you don't know anyone unless you studied like the call yeah. sheet the night before and they all know who you are.
Yeah.
And I've tried to like make a point. I'm like, I'm going to Tom Hanks this shit. I'm going to say hi and introduce myself to everyone I meet. And then I did that once and then forgot to do it every other time after that. But it is like, it's important. I don't know. You don't know who you're working with and how long they've been doing that. Maybe they're feeling the same way too. They also don't know anyone.
It's a very vulnerable feeling. And the one set that I was on that I thought was so great because on Lady Bird, Greta Gerwig made everybody wear name tags with your name and what you did. And that was so helpful because
that's
half
so great.
The time you're like, is the sound person's name John or is that, the, you know, like,
yeah.
And you're just like, lost. And then by the time you kind of get your bearings, you're leaving. And so I thought that was so great because then you could just like call people by name and then you just pulled it off right before you were shooting and you put it back on afterwards. Cause it's like, it is a very disconcerting feeling coming into a show in like the sixth season or the 10th season or like, where it's like a well-oiled machine and everyone has this vibe of total relaxation. Like they're at work, but it's like, they're so relaxed and you're just in fight or flight. And I remember on so many guest star jobs where I'm like, I would love to be that relaxed. Like I would love to get to do this and to know that if I mess up, I'm not going to berate myself the whole way home, you know, because people mess up and it's not a big deal. But when you only have
just a day on the job.
One little thing to do, you're like, well, if I mess up, it's going to look like I'm not prepared. And so I still think about that a lot and think about like when people are just, you know, they're just like laughing in between takes and then they're like action, you know, that they're just.
Yeah. Yeah. When you watch bloopers from like the set of a sitcom, when you're just like, wow, they have the best job in the entire world.
Yeah.
And when I've been on the set of a sitcom for like an hour to like come and say my one line, it ain't like that.
No, it's.
And
really
it really incredible. Is. And there's another great lesson for, I mean, I think for actors, but for anyone in your story, which is that like so much of going to set is like pretending that you know what you're doing, even when you don't, and not and trying not to stand out and trying to just be like, oh yeah, this is this. Well, I know exactly what my role is, exactly what the rhythms are. I know how to sort of like, I know when it's time to just kick back in my chair. I know when it's time to get up. And you often don't know that you just don't know what the like rhythms and culture of that show is. But in your case, you said, when you finally just said openly to Kristen Davis, like, this is my first job. I don't know what I'm doing. It unlocked everything.
It was like, it was a full reset. It was like, she looked at me with totally different eyes and And that, you know, and it's not easy to be, it's that thing, you know, vulnerability is brave, you know, but in that regard, I felt like I was just in the most socially awkward because, you know, there's just the two of us. And then, you know, they're changing the lights and you're just sort of like sitting in silence, you know, it's so intensely awkward.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
you're like, do people want to make small talk with me? Do they want me to be silent? Am I supposed to be making a joke right now? It's hell.
And it's a lot of energy to be a lead too, like, and take care of so many people on set. So I also feel for the leads of shows, like they probably just want to get like conserve their energy, get through the day.
Sign their 400 things.
And so get on with it. Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. Because I do remember like on Enlightened, they would have to tell people, like, give Laura breaks, you know, because people would want to, like, joke around with her in between. And not, we wouldn't be thinking about the fact that, well, she's in every single scene. So not only is she in every scene, the breaks are her, really her only time to just kind of, and the rest of us are like, like, joking around during the breaks. But she really needed people to just leave her alone. And, you know, it's like, you don't think of that side of it too. So yeah, it was, it was, It was an interesting perspective. But my favorite was when he was like, the telephone's not going to ring, you know.
ring.
Just
and that was MPK, right? Yeah. He also directed this episode.
Yeah.
My closest friend.
Yes, we love him.
You know, there's another iconic cameo in addition to Bane Gibby in this episode. Charlotte's story continues at Barney's, and she goes there with Carrie, and then she tries to walk around blindfolded, and then she finds Carrie trying on shoes, and there's Andy Cohen in a non-speaking, uncredited role.
That was Andy Cohen?
Yes.
No, but I did notice that guy, and I was like, that's a very goofy face.
Yes, he gives like the big nod.
He's like,
first AD was clearly like, no words. We're not paying you for
so funny.
Actor.
That's Andy Cohen, my God.
Yes, I feel like
whatever happened to him.
Okay. Yeah, I will never know. I think I was guessing that Sarah Jessica was probably trying to get him on for years because they were really good friends.
Yeah.
And finally it was like, oh, there's just this shoe salesman. You're not gonna say anything. We'll get to hang out for like
but you could touch
half a day. We'll just be together. Yeah.
He was like, great.
He's like, great.
In.
Yeah. I love it.
Anything else from this episode? I mean, we didn't talk, you know, Samantha, we touched on her story a little bit where she's, you know, going to this event, the 30 under 30, where Smith is one of the 30 under 30, but Richard is hosting the event. And yeah, it's kind of parallel to what's going on with Miranda because she's sort of caught between the old boyfriend and the new boyfriend. Richard, by the way, I find as repulsive as Petrovsky.
He's disgusting.
A true slime ball.
Yeah, was back then for me and still now.
Yeah.
But Samantha's performance was really lovely. And that moment where she hugs Smith at the end was really...
It was really beautiful. And
you see her changing and grow. It's funny because like Smith needs to grow up, but she's actually the one growing up.
Yes.
Yeah, it's nice too the way that they really they balance. So Samantha kind of has this, you know, a little bit less comedic, more dramatic storyline, and then you kind of have the Miranda funny, you know, elevator stuff to balance it out. Like they really do manage to have a good balance between all the different storylines. Like if one is heavy, the other is light, you know. And the other thing that I noticed, I mean, it was so crazy watching this episode because I realized I know almost every line from it. Cause at the time before I put it on, I thought, well, I kind of remember a few scenes from this, but then once it was playing, I was like, I know this, this is in a deep corner of my brain. Every single line.
Yeah.
Some of the really funny little editing things, like when Miranda is waiting for Steve to go and talk to Robert and the mirrored elevators close. And then there are just like those two extras from the building standing there, like the two old ladies. Did you notice that? It's just like the two, this is like, it's like just a sight gag where the elevators close and there's just like one really short kind of wide lady and one really tall slim lady, just classic New Yorkers. And they just like hold the camera on them for just a second, you know, to just I just felt like there were some really funny moments like that that I noticed. When another one was when Carrie is walking through Petrovsky's space and he's like, oh, and this used to be a sweatshop. And she goes, that is a lovely story.
Yes. I noticed how callous Carrie was in this episode. I was like, okay, moving on. Like insulting the artist.
Right.
Or I can't remember if that was the episode before. There were two things that I thought were funny. One, the French woman that's speaking to him at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Not at the end, in the middle. She's just saying stuff in French and literally she goes, va te faire enculer, which means go fuck yourself. I think she was just saying French words.
It's like the only things
that made me laugh.
Yeah, because I was thinking, because like, she says it very like, maintenant, You know, like I was like, this is an American really trying to serve us. I'm French.
French. Authentic French. Yeah. She was just saying words that was funny. And also I noticed a continuity thing.
Oh, the hair. Ooh.
Tell me if you guys noticed
the hair.
The hair. Yes.
Glaring. Yes.
So she has straight hair when she enters Petrovsky's apartment. After they have sex, her hair is curly. And then when she leaves Petrovsky's, straight again.
I do remember that.
You're so right.
And I remember at the time we were all like, what happened? Because we were all watching her hair very intently all the time.
I guess you could justify it, you know, they got nasty that night and like her hair for sure frizzed. And then she did it again in the morning.
But then like
she went to the bathroom and did the like put on makeup really quick and pretend that I just woke up like this. And she flat ironed it real quick.
Yeah. I mean, nobody was carrying a flat iron in those days. And she didn't have anything at his apartment yet. So she didn't have any product. She couldn't change her look.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
We got to speak to MPK.
Yeah, I'm sure he was pissed about that.
We got to give him all our notes. Yeah, as soon as she walks into his place, it's like, wow, this is such a beautiful apartment. I've never felt less cozy in a space than I do in Alexander's place, you know?
For sure.
And that's it's like, even as shitty as Big was in so many days, like there was a coziness to him and to their relationship. Mm-hmm. And like, she never felt like remotely comfortable with this guy.
No, he's not cozy. But I do like there is a moment at the end where he's like mirroring her. I can't remember what the line was. It's like, why do you like me? I don't know. And he like hits her a little. Like, I don't know. I just like you. And I felt like he was like really mirroring her.
Yeah, that's his dancer.
Yeah.
Well, here's.
Yeah, and he has his charm.
Here's a question. Do you guys think that they wanted this to feel cozy and intimate, and when it wasn't because the two actors didn't really have the chemistry, they kind of pivoted the storyline to make it like, oh, this was her lesson of like, yes, he gives her the dresses and he has all the trappings, but like it's just not there? Or do you think Petrovsky was always supposed to be sort of this, oh yeah, he's a famous rich guy, but there's no heart connection? Because I think sometimes, like, they were going to have her end up with Berger, I read somewhere. And then it was like the actors didn't really gel. And so then they made that just another sort of relationship.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. We literally just talked about the Berger episode before we started recording. And it's like, he's such a flash in the pan. It's so weird to think about a sliding doors universe where
he was
Mr. Big.
Because in a way, Berger was, not to get off on a Berger tangent, but he was sort of the male equivalent. Like he was an author and he was creative and like they had a lot on paper in common, but they didn't really have a great relationship. It didn't.
Yeah.
But I'm just – the Petrovsky thing is just – I feel like it's – we all have one of those in our dating history where it's like, I'm going to go with this person who does all these like – things that are just so foreign to me. And then you just kind of want that comfy old shoe back, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That old dirty shoe. Those dirty feet sticking up the 200 South La Brea.
Who's wearing stinky feet perfume in here?
That's so funny.
Who smells?
As if she was accusing one of you of having stinky feet. It's you.
Nadine DeJury, Bane Gibby, both of you have perfect smelling feet. I can tell that just through the Zoom. And so grateful for your time and your wisdom. And Bane, so fun to take this trip down memory lane.
Thank you for letting me take it because it was nice to dip back into 2004 for a moment and give me that perspective and just revisit these OG episodes. They're so good.
Yeah.
They're so good. Agreed. It's been a pleasure, Matt. Thank you.
Thank you both. And that's our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram @AndJustLikeMattPod.
And Just Like Matt is a World of Wonder production created and hosted by me, Matt McConkey. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky. And our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.